What's going to happen to Wilmington's West Bank? The area across the Cape Fear River from downtown Wilmington, that includes both Eagles Island and Point Peter, has been the subject of hot debate in recent months, with those who'd like to see substantial development of the land squaring off with those who want minimal development, if any at all. But while the West Bank has been almost entirely undeveloped for decades now, it wasn't always that way. The area has a rich history of its own that in many ways runs parallel to the history of Wilmington. This is Cape Fear Unearthed, the podcast exploring the legends, historical oddities, and landmark stories of southeastern North Carolina. I'm your host, John Staton, and I'm a reporter with the Star News here in Wilmington. We're a Gannett paper that's part of the USA Today network. To know where you're going, or where you should go, it helps to know where you've been. So in today's podcast, we're going to get into the history of Wilmington's West Bank. My guest is journalist Scott Nunn, a longtime Star News writer and now an independent journalist who has contributed to the Wilmington Business Journal and public radio station WHQR. Scott has written extensively about this issue in recent months, and he covered local history for the Star News for many years. All right, so I am sitting here with Scott Nunn. Thank you so much, Scott, my old colleague, for coming to sit down with Cape Fear Unearthed and talk a little local history with us.
Yeah, John, it's glad to be back at the Star News. I kind of took an early retirement a while back and have been doing some local writing as an independent journalist, but always good to, Star News will always be my home, like it or not. But yeah, pretty cool sitting here looking on the fourth floor, looking across to Eagles Island, which is our topic of discussion today. And I think what's interesting is although I see Eagles Island, we don't, you know, it's kind of a little hidden piece of our history. And I know myself, I grew up here and kind of knew a lot about the history, but never knew much about Eagles Island until the last couple of years.
Yeah,
and it came back roaring back into the news.
Absolutely. And that's kind of why we're here is that, the whole idea of will there be development there? Should there be development there? Because the idea is kind of, well, we're going to go somewhere in the future. Let's take a step back and look at where we've come from in the past and what the kind of the history of that area is. Now, interestingly, people keep calling it the West Bank now, because it's kind of, Eagles Island is part of it, but tell me about, okay, what is the West Bank? Like when we say the West Bank, what are we talking about?
Yeah, well, it would, I think we would be talking strictly about Eagles Island for the most part, except one of the projects plan for that side of the river or proposed to that side of the river, and it's really the biggest one. This is the one with the several multi-story towers. That is actually on Point Peter, which is technically not part of Eagles Island.
Right.
The Cape Fear River cuts off Eagles Island to the north, and it begins at the south where the Brunswick River and the Cape Fear River converge there. So while technically Point Peter is not part of Eagles Island, it's very much on the table, so to speak, as what people are discussing, because it's what we see really when you're standing, say, at riverfront, on the riverfront walk, and you're looking across at the battleship.
Yeah.
That's Eagles Island,
right.
And as you look to the right, you'll see the smaller bridge that's over there, not the Northeast River Bridge, but the little bridge kind of hidden over there. That's really the area. That we're talking about.
Right.
Point Peter is to the north, a little off to the right there, but Eagles Island, and it's about 3,000 acres of fairly marshy land, and a lot of good geographical research has been done on it, and it really was developed by silt deposits from the Cape Fear River. So
because it lies between the Brunswick and the Cape Fear, and then with the Northeast coming in there. So it's built from river sediment essentially.
Yeah, it's more or less this is a simplification, but it's kind of a gigantic sandbar that's
right,
been there a long, long time.
That is interesting. Well, yeah. So let's talk about that area, because that area really, I mean, it kind of parallels the history of Wilmington. I mean, that obviously that area has been there since Wilmington was founded in the early 1700s, and so that kind of has a parallel history. So going back, first of all, we should say the name Eagles Island comes from the guy who originally owned that land. It was a guy named Richard Eagles. He was a British guy, came to Charleston and moved up. He was a rice planter, moved up from to Wilmington in about 1734.
Yeah, and that kind of predates a few years by there's debate, a little bit of debate about when Wilmington was incorporated,
right.
But it tends to be 19, around 1740. Yeah. Circa 1740 is a good date. So yeah, so so really there was development going on Eagles Island before Wilmington was actually incorporated. Yeah. Now there was obviously a town over here by other names and people were living here.
New Liverpool. Well, yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about why, because you wrote a really good article that kind of breaks down. You know, people came here. Why did they develop this side more so than the other side?
Yeah, I think when development was proposed over there recently, what came to my mind is why that, you know, that side of the river. Why wasn't Wilmington over there, for example? And so the story I wrote, kind of a history overview for WHQR, what I discovered in my research and what local historian Beverly Tedderton helped point out, that it is about the geography. You've got a river roaring through there. It's the only river in the state that actually flows into the ocean. And so Wilmington, you might not think of Wilmington as hilly, but the bluffs that look over the Cape Fear River, it really, and you'll notice when you're on Ann Street, if you drive down toward Chandler's Wharf, it's hilly over here.
Yeah, well, and I think your story points out, you know, we have a 35-foot riverbank here, and I think across the river is about 15 foot. So that kind of sealed the deal for people back then. It's like, well, we don't want to get flooded. We'll be on the 35-foot side.
And another point that I had never really thought about is there was lots of fresh water over here.
Now, see, that is something I never knew. That's fascinating. Yeah, so there's streams. And as you know, you walk, you know, there's all kind of streams flowing into the river.
Yeah.
And less so on that side.
And water obviously was a big deal. You could dig a well over here and get fresh water. I don't think you'd have any luck getting anything but brackish and salt water if you were to drill a well
on that side of the river. That is fascinating. But on the other hand, what the marshy nature of that island, Eagles Island and the West Bank, meant that it was, back in the day, is good for rice cultivation. So the guys coming up from Charleston, the history I'm reading says by the, you know, mid to late 1700s, there was extensive, you know, rice cultivation going on in Eagles Island.
Absolutely. And, you know, what we may think of now is Orton Plantation, obviously down towards Southport, but there were rice plantations all up and down that side of the Cape Fear River. And it's this perfect land for that, with these kind of streams and marshes going through there. So that's really was its bread and butter in the early days, were those rice plantations.
And there was speaking of Point Peter, there was a Mallet's rice plantation on Point Peter, and there was, from what I'm reading, there's an extensive, you know, because there's, you know, when you're planting rice, you got to have, you know, drainage and all kind of, you know, ditches and little levees and all kind of stuff. So it was developed for that.
I think going back to how we describe the area that we're talking about, and for a practical purpose, I think it's fair to say when you're saying Eagles Island today, you can include Point Peter in it for practical, not technically, but for practical terms. Sure. Because it's a hard distinction to make. But the rice plantations for a long time. Now, I've never been really clear on why the rice plantations declined.
Yeah.
Although, you know, there's a, you know, a piece of our history, obviously, that, you know, they were built and worked by slaves.
Well, and that's the thing. That's another thing I read, is that, you know, to make those plantations profitable, you had to have enslaved people.
Exactly.
Like a lot of, you know, not just a couple, but dozens.
A lot.
So, and that's, you know, and, you know, wrong as it was, that's expensive. So I think this will be a good segue into I don't know this, one reason they may have gotten away from it was, you know, the naval stores industry became very big around here.
Right.
Back in those days, profitable business for some people to get into at that time.
Naval stores is a term we don't hear thrown around much anymore.
I used to always think, like when I was a kid, like naval stores, I was like, that's when you go to the Navy stuff?
Exactly.
Whatever that is.
and basically what it was, we're the state of the longleaf pine, and they're obviously everywhere around our area, and they would use basically the sap from, they would actually cut into them, and sap would drain out, and it would be used to make pitch and tar, and other products that were used, turpentine that were used for a variety of things, including making wooden vessels watertight.
Yep, exactly.
It was a huge business. And, you know, for up until 1910, Wilmington was the biggest city in the state. And this was really, that naval stores industry was the most important industry really up until around the, you know, the turn of the century. Exactly.
Well, if you go back in Wilmington, as far as that's why we were, you know, so valuable to the British Empire, is like there's a lot of naval stores coming out of Wilmington going all over the British Empire.
Yeah, and that that did, that early development over there did precede the cotton industry, which would come along a little later. But as things went along, you know, there was not only the naval stores industry was a big part of it, was the major part of it. But there are other small industries over there as well. There was some logging, and then some shipbuilding began, and it was a small port area, but the big port side was over on this side of the river. It wasn't where the safe port is. It was port was in downtown.
Exactly. And this is interesting too. You know, I'm talking about why a lot of those naval store industries were located over there instead of over here.
Yeah, that's a really intriguing part of the story to me, because why not be over here where the city is and where everyone is?
So inconvenient to get over there.
There were no bridges.
There were multiple ferries.
Yeah, no bridges. Some really small
ferries like we think of today, but a little guy on a little boat.
Very small ferries and hard to get over there. And so, but one of the main reasons they went over there was very practical. If you think about turpentine. If you've ever burned a piece of old pine, we call it fat like wood around here. It goes up like crazy.
Yeah, so, my dad has a good story about a guy. He came to one of his friend's house. He had a bunch of that fat light wood. He said, "Oh, I'm build a fire." So he loaded up the fireplace with fat light wood. Not good.
No.
You know? So it makes a big hot flame.
Burns quickly and it burns hot. Doesn't burn real long, but it burns quick and hot. And it was really dangerous to have it in Wilmington, which was built of, you know, there were hundreds of wooden buildings, a wooden wharf, and there had been fires over here before. So there was some naval stores over here. But Wilmington, as some of the history points out, was really known, like I said, it's the largest city in the state. Mm-hmm. Downtown Wilmington, as it was known as this elegant place. Of sophisticated people.
Right.
So Eagles Island basically became our industrial zone. I like to compare it a little bit to the current day 421 North corridor.
There you go. That's interesting.
And so, not only was it a fire hazard, but it was also nasty. It puts off some pretty nasty fumes, the processing of it. Because they would have to boil this stuff down.
Yeah, if you ever, gotten any pine sap on you, just imagine working with a big vat of it. God.
And they distilled it. It was actually like you would be making bourbon. They had to distill it and to get it to certain purification. So it was a nasty process. And so the folks in Wilmington were, I guess, happy to have it over there. It obviously contributed majorly to the economy, but it stayed over there on that side of the river.
Oh, and then you mentioned that, and then at some point in the 1800s, there was even a railroad.
Yeah, there was. I think it was called the Wilmington and Manchester Railroad came and stopped, terminated there at Eagles Island. And there's actually, I don't know if it's still there today, but I remember as a kid, my father and my brother taking me over there to where some of the remains of that old railroad terminal were. We actually found some, we're probably not supposed to be over there digging, but we found some pieces of pottery and this and that. So there would have been a railroad coming through there. It was big business. And it was really, you know, you've seen some of the old pictures and there was a lot over there. You don't see much now except the battleship, but there was a lot over there back in the day.
That is the interesting thing, because I'm reading there were warehouses down there for timber. I mean, there was some shipping of some, you know, agricultural, you know, products, food, essentially, was going on over there. But you're right. And if you go to the Cape Fear Museum, has a wonderful feature on its site, you can go and access all their historic photos, and you can find a bunch of photos of Eagles Island from circa early, even by the early 1900s. They were still doing naval stores there. There was the Turpentine Yard there. There's a photo, there's a great photo, and you look over there, and there's all kinds of stuff over there.
Yeah,
docks and all kind of buildings, and it wasn't like you look over there now, it's just wilderness. It was very, even, 100 years ago, it was plenty of stuff over there.
What strikes me about those photos is they were taking, some of them at the turn of the century, and they were really vivid, detailed photos. Yeah. And I was also
some of those photos are horrible.
Some
of them are.
It's cool to see names of companies and faces of the people.
Yeah.
And it did strike me that, this is maybe at the end of the 1800s. So slavery is over. Obviously, we've got the Jim Crow South developing. But most of the people I see in that photos are African-American people.
Yep, all the guys working over there. Yeah. Black,
not
basically.
Enslaved, but they're still part, part a very rich part of the local community and a part of our legacy and some history that's probably been forgotten.
Well, for sure. And people wonder, I used to wonder, why is that part of the Gullah Geechee, corridor? Well, the reason why is because, enslaved black people worked on the rice plantations.
Exactly.
And even after they weren't, enslaved any longer, they still worked over there, former Central and West African people. Working for these naval store businesses and, the timber and, the other industries over there. So it's, there's a lot of history there.
There's that really distinct Gullah Geechee culture that developed. It's a very important part of our history that is probably often overlooked. And really, Eagles Island and Point Peter were very much the hub of it, that rice plantation area, and then later the naval store.
For sure. And I don't want to, understate what that's a pretty dark part of our history as well.
It is.
I mean, if you get to Point Peter, if you look into Point Peter, there used to be a road in this area called, it was for 100 years, it was called Negro Head Road, except for they didn't call it Negro Head Road.
Yeah.
And it came from, an incident in the early 1800s. The famous Nat Turner slave rebellion happened in Virginia, and that kind of sent shockwaves throughout, white people in the South, worried that their slaves would revolt. That resulted in some, pretty bad incident in the 1830s when some slaves got accused of, starting a rebellion. Probably was, false confessions tortured out of them, and, half a dozen guys got out decapitated and their heads got put up on stakes in that road, which is now Point Peter. That's where it started. And actually that road went up all the way through up into Pender County and into Duplin. But
fortunately we are...
it's a dark history.
Yeah, it is. And unfortunately we are slowly starting to address that history. It needs to be recorded. People need to know about it. I think you may have said something similar to me, that growing up here and attending local schools, I never heard about 1898, much less anything going on over there. It just wasn't talked about. But it is an important part of our history, and the Eagles Island is a very important part of it.
And I just wanted to mention that and to have that part of it and not have it be forgotten. But speaking of 1898, by the time 1898 came around, cotton was a huge thing.
Yeah.
And cotton is really, it seems like the rise of cotton is kind of what really... naval stores were becoming less important, even though there were, businesses doing that over there until the early 1900s. Cotton had really kind of wiped away a lot of the need to be over it on Eagles Island.
Exactly. Right? And one thing, we overlogged. We wiped out a bunch of the longleaf pine forests that cut back on it as a resource to make the naval stores. And we were beginning to see steel-based ships, steamers, which did not need so much of these products. And cotton being obviously a little a cleaner industry, when cotton was brought to Wilmington, basically what was done to it here is they used steam to compress it.
Yeah.
And Alexander Spunt owned the big cotton press here. And cotton's very bulky and unwieldy, and to be able to ship it, they needed to steam it, soften it up, compress it into as small bundles as possible. Think of these like giant haystacks, for example. And that was fairly clean industry. And
yeah, so, compared to naval stores, for
exactly.
Sure.
and Alexander Sprunt's operation was here on the northern part of downtown Wilmington, yeah. past, obviously, the Cotton Exchange.
Yeah.
And so they would sell it here and ship it off. So naval stores is declining. There was a time, a period, though, one thing that another industry adjacent to the naval stores was shipbuilding and ship repair.
Well, and that's one thing I did. I'm glad you brought that up, because if you can back up a little bit, there was, and I know if you already said this, there was a Confederate shipyard over on the West Bank.
Yeah, it was called the Bellamy Shipyard.
During the mid-19th century.
Yeah, and Dr. Chris Fonville, our friend and professor emeritus of history at UNCW, yep. he probably knows more about local history than anyone around here, especially the Civil War era. You know, he said that really did in turn into an important part of the Confederacy's marine effort during the Civil War, and that was running at the same time as the naval stores. But slowly, as cotton comes in and the war is over, there's no need. Yeah. The need for the shipyards and the repair yards slowly started to decline.
Yeah, so that went away. And so then, from when this report, as the really, and you can find it very easily online, the company called Environmental Services Incorporated did a report for the New Hanover Soil and Water Conservation District about 10 years ago that goes into a lot of the histories of Eagles Island, a lot of the geography, a lot of the environmental stuff on there. According to that, by the early 1900s, you know, first of all, naval stores were all but gone, and just there was really a lot less activity on Eagles Island and the West Bank by the early. And I wonder too, because they have documented that there's more days of, you know, especially in recent years, there's a lot more flooding.
Exactly.
Than there used to be over there.
Dr. Fonville pointed out, and he agrees with that timeline, is that it was really some of the shipping repair industry stayed around really up until about World War One.
Yeah.
When there was shipbuilding industry in Wilmington, not to be confused with the World War Two era, which was much bigger. But there were World War One shipbuilding industries, but they had all moved over to the east side of the river, to the Wilmington side of the river. So we're not aware. There were probably some, Chris believes that there were some facilities over there that were related, but no major shipbuilding facilities were on that side of the river. And I think Chris has a great quote here from my story for WHUR. He says that at that point, Eagles Island became a cemetery for abandoned vessels.
Yeah, so that's when we're really getting into the mid, you know, early to mid 20th century.
Yeah,
you know, that's when it kind of stopped being, you know, a place that was really used. I mean, and Beverly Tedder makes some good points in that story too. Is that, you know, especially about the 60s when they brought the battleship in the early 60s, there was really nothing over there except abandoned stuff, abandoned docks, ruins, old, broken down buildings and.
Exactly. Beverly had pointed out there had been several fires over there. We talked about even with the naval stores on decline, it was still a woodsy area. There was little probably access to any firefighting apparatus there.
True.
It's filled with hot burning pine trees. So not a good place.
And actually, Beverly has pointed out that there was a series of fires that kind of, you know, put the nail in the coffin, so to speak.
When Chris says it's a cemetery for abandoned vessels, there still are remnants over there that you can see. And unfortunately, you can't see. I remember going over there about 30 years ago and actually could walk out on some of those vessels.
Really?
These are old tugboats. Some of them a couple of them have been moved over to the Cape Fear Museum. But there were many of these vessels over there that were just left. And you could sit at Chandler's Wharf and have a drink and look across the river and see some of these vessels over there. And then there was a scattering of industry still there, but not much. Now, I will point out around the early 20th century, that had become a supply and repair yard for the Corps of Engineers,
right,
which was headquartered here. One of the big things the Corps of Engineers was doing back in the day, this is a whole nother podcast maybe,
right, right,
is they were building the wall down at Fort Fisher, that seawall that runs out there, which at the time was the biggest project the Corps of Engineers had ever undertaking. And they were using that yard there, and it remains there today, along with a couple of other smaller industries that are over there, mainly marine-related.
Well, and that is really interesting to talk about. I mean, the Corps of Engineers might be a kind of a good segue, because they're talking about, they've been there 100 years, and now I think you did a story, we've done stories about how they might be, because of all the flooding that's happening in Eagles Island, they're considering maybe relocating to a different place.
Yeah, I came across that several months back, and worked, did some reporting for WHQR about that, and I was just struck that that's pretty amazing. This is the one entity in the United States that's responsible for flood mitigation, and they're being flooded up to the point of where they told me that some days they just can't operate over there.
Well, and that's what, and I've heard, because I don't want people to get the idea, the point of doing this isn't to say, well, there used to be industry over there, in the past, and there's reasons why there's not industry there now. Now, obviously, the whole flooding component of whatever future is going to happen over there is huge. And I think it was maybe even more, certainly more acute today, it seems like. If you talk to Kim Burdett and some of the other environmental people, flooding over there is certainly more acute than it was 100 years ago, and is not forecast to get any better.
Yeah, well, I'll give you a recent real world example. I went over there 4 or 5 months ago to a press conference, and this was by a group that was coming out, or several groups that were coming out in opposition to some of the development proposed there. And it was held aboard the battleship. The battleship has taken no formal position on this, but they did allow the ship to be used to hold this press conference. And to get onto the battleship that day, I had to wade through knee-deep water from the parking lot.
Well, now, I've heard that they've had to close early because of flooding. Now, and that's not to say, to be fair, I'm sure that things, you can always build things up and make things happen. We're human beings, and we're very smart, and we can figure out ways to get over there. Now, whether that is a good idea or not, that might be another podcast, another conversation.
And that's exactly what the battleship is having to do. Was their parking lot is being flooded, and access is being restricted. They're undertaking a pretty major project to elevate the parking lot about 3 feet. And this flooding, it comes from a couple of things. If the wind blows in the right direction, the river's flow will reverse. It'll go upstream instead of downstream.
Yep.
And as Kent Burdett with Cape Fear River Watch pointed out, because they've dredged so much around the port to get larger vessels in, the river holds more water now. So there's a lot more water in the river. So when it pushes up, you're pushing a lot more water up the river. And we're seeing these what's called sunny day flooding.
Yeah.
This is not our Hurricane Florence flooding.
Right.
We've got that. But if that was the case, then we may be okay. But you'll have the sun shine as bright as it can because of the moon, the wind, and you've got you've got flooding going on there that's disrupting everybody. That's something goes on.
Well, and that's going to be, and that's why this is going to be, I feel like a big story for, probably years to come at this point.
Yeah.
Because, one point, and this is maybe backing up a little bit, but talking about why there have been talk of, because they've been talking about building over there for, building over there again for decades, right? But as Beverly Tenderman points out at one point, after the 60s, after the Coastline Railroad left, Wilmington had a lot less people. A lot of the buildings got knocked down. There was a lot more space over here.
Exactly.
So it made more sense. If you're building anything new, well, there's no need to go. Now, Wilmington downtown is so built out for anything big, especially.
That is great.
Kind of, it makes sense that people are considering, going back over there.
That's a great point. Talked to Jean Merritt, who was responsible for a lot of the restoration, historic reservation in downtown Wilmington, and very much a leader of getting the Riverwalk built. And I said, Gene, why did no one talk about Eagles Island back in the day? And did y'all think about it at all? What might be, you're going to build this river wall, what's going to happen to the view that you see? Yeah. And he pointed out, just like Beverly said, he said, there are so many empty buildings over here.
Right.
And so much, you know, a land that could, that buildings were, you know, being torn down on, that it just, he said it just never crossed their mind.
Yeah.
Well, it would be part of it.
Yeah. And this is, I mean, obviously, this is just, I feel like we could talk for hours about this because it's such a fascinating topic. And there's, I mean, I feel like we've kind of just glossed over the history to a certain extent because there's so much out there that you can talk about. But, you know, I do think that it's important to kind of, as we've said already, I think we're going to be moving forward. Something's going to be happening over there, you know, probably sooner rather than later. So I think it's important to kind of get out there. Well, what is the history of the area? Kind of, you have to kind of, the whole idea of you have to know where you've been before you know where you are going or where you should go.
Exactly. And it's, in a sense, I'm glad that it is receiving some attention because we are being reminded of the important history. I was talking to Commissioner, County Commissioner Rob Zappel, and part of the land, and just going back a sec to the geography itself and the boundaries, most of it is Brunswick County.
That's right. Yeah, I think people don't realize that it is most. I think he said it's mostly Brunswick.
It's almost all Brunswick County.
Mostly Brunswick County. Yeah.
And there was an area carved out around the battleship that is New Hanover County, and that was done prior to when the battleship came in the early 1960s because they wanted it to be in New Hanover County technically.
That's interesting.
Interesting. Probably one of the biggest stakeholders in the whole thing is the city of Wilmington. Because anything that happens over there changes the view of our award-winning riverfront.
Right.
And the city of Wilmington has no, they've got a lot of skin in the game, but they have no seat at the table, technically.
Yeah. Well, and then to get, and then before we wrap up, I think you had another really interesting, I think this was in the Business Journal, that drew a lot of parallels to Savannah and some stuff that's going on down in Savannah that's very similar to the issues that we're dealing with here.
Yeah, I started to think, would there be some examples of other riverfront cities that had, especially coastal riverfront cities, that what goes on their side of the river? I mean, you think about New York City, well, obviously you've got development on all sides of rivers, but, you know, Charleston is very different. It comes out on a point itself. So I thought about Savannah, and I hit a winner there because they have a very similar situation. Yep. They have an island across from downtown Savannah. In their case, it's to the north of Savannah, the way the geography runs there, and it's
Hutchinson Island.
And it's very much the same history. It was it was industrial. It was used for naval stores. It was used for where the heavy industry was. Now they've taken a different tact. Whereas this is Eagles Island is Brunswick County, and there are little it's owned by a variety of people, including the New Hanover County Soil and Conservation Commission. The state owns a bit. The federal government owns
some private
good amount. Private owners.
Yeah.
Well, in Savannah, they annexed the island, so it's part of Savannah, and they're going. They are really developing it now. Their convention center is on their version of Eagles Island, and so and they're really doing some major development there. So it's a little a bit of a different tact than what we've done here. One quick step back, because I think this is a fun part of the story. I'll make it fast, but the people who are familiar with World War II will know that after the war ended, there was what was called a ghost fleet of ships. Many were Liberty ships that had actually been built in Wilmington during World War II, and there were hundreds of them lining the Brunswick River. This would be, I guess, the west bank of Eagles Island.
Yeah, on the other side.
Side of Eagles Island. So think about when you leave, cross the Cape Fear Memorial Bridge and head up toward Leland, you cross another river, that's the Brunswick River, and you would have looked to your left and seen hundreds of pretty 400, 500-foot ships there for a long time. And that land is still owned today by the federal government and is part of the Navy Department. So there's a lot of...
That's a whole fascinating story.
Another piece.
You can do right there. Well, Scott, we'll have to end it there because it's like I said, we could go on for a while, but it's just such a fascinating topic, and I'm so glad I had you in to talk about it because you know so much about it, and it's just it's a lot of nuances here and a lot of nooks and crannies, and it's just a great story, and the story is going to continue happening.
Yeah, this one is going away. There are a lot of ideas, whether it's massive commercial development or minimal commercial development, or as some people have looked to, is something that would mirror our Riverwalk, the Riverwalk over there, and like, also some park, perhaps a park conservation.
It feels like almost
area.
Everything is on the table at this point. It's a kind of a key time in the. In the development, or as you could put it, is it really a key time in the history of Eagles Island? Because it's what happened is, in the next few years, is it really going to determine what goes on there for decades to come?
Yeah, I think a good way to look at it would be Point Peter is where the Northeast Cape Fear River it converges away from the Cape Fear River.
Yeah.
One runs to the west, one runs to the north, and that's kind of where we're at now. We're kind of at this place where we're going to emerge either way. So, well, thanks for having me in and for keeping this really nice, somewhat forgotten piece of our history, and I'm glad that it's receiving some attention again.
All right, Scott. Thanks, man.
Take care, John.
And that's it for this episode of Cape Fear Unearthed and our look at the history of Eagles Island and Wilmington's West Bank. We'll be back soon with another chapter of Wilmington history. Till then, make sure you're a member of our Facebook group, where listeners can ask questions about our episodes and share their own memories of the region's history. In that group, I post extra content from each episode and links to all my coverage of local history for the Star News. You can find that group by searching Cape Fear Unearthed on Facebook. And don't forget to sign up for a Cape Fear Unearthed newsletter that goes out every Thursday. Sign up for the newsletter at starnewsonline.com/newsletters. Cape Fear Unearthed was written, edited, and hosted by yours truly, John Staten. You can find more of my work at starnewsonline.com. This podcast was made possible by listeners and readers like you. Support local journalism and Cape Fear Unearthed by subscribing to the Star News today at starnewsonline.com/subscribe. And while you're subscribing to things, be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you stream this show so you never miss an episode. While you're there, leave us a review, which will help more people find Cape Fear Unearthed. Till then, get out and explore the Cape Fear region on your own. You never know what you might unearth.